Hey, it's Nudia from Vocalo. Got plans July 11th? Now you do. Join me for Vocalo's free summer meltdown concert at Bottom Lounge with Adam Killa and Taylor Bennett. We'll have merch giveaways and surprise guests. Learn more at wbez.org/events.
Former Alderman George Cardenas represented the city's 12th ward for two decades.
He's the second person this month to launch a bid for mayor, joining Illinois Comptroller Susana Mendoza.
The letter states those council members plan to reject the sale of Chicago parking meters to New York-based investment firm Stone Peak Partners.
This is a terrible deal in 2008, and you know that responsibility, based upon city code, rests with city council.
Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Thursday, and we're breaking down the big stories of the week in our weekly news recap. A new candidate enters the Chicago mayoral race. The Department of Justice challenges Evanston's reparations program, accusing it of racial discrimination. Governor Pritzker signs hemp regulations into law. And a grand opening for a museum Chicago's waited years for.
The Obama Presidential Center is finally opening to the public.
Its eight-story museum, now a towering addition to Chicago's South Side.
Final preparations are underway with crews getting everything in place for the grand opening ceremony that is supposed to start at 11 o'clock this morning.
This community embraced me and gave me a chance.
We've seen mortgages double over the last 10 years the Woodlawn area, and obviously that trickles down to renters too.
I never want to see anyone get displaced because of the rising costs of rent.
We'll get into those stories and much more, but let's start today's episode with a closer look at some changes coming to a building in Jackson Park. And this time, we are not talking about the Obama Presidential Center. With me to discuss is Lee Bay, Chicago Sun-Times architecture critic. He's also one of our panelists this week. Wonderful to see you, Lee.
Great to see you, too.
Great to have you on the podcast.
Thank you. Great to be here.
It's our first time for everything.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got some information about changes coming to the Museum of Science and Industry. Do tell.
Oh, yes. This is the building's south entrance, which sits by the lagoon, which has been closed, as far as anybody knows, since the World's Fair ended. They're going to open it up to the public and put a cafe and other things in behind the door to really make it a welcoming place, a new entrance for the museum.
That's beautiful, because I'm thinking of the fact that, first of all, I live nearby and I was actually just in the area. I happened to be sort of walking around the grounds on the back, and I was like, it would be so great if there was a way into the museum from here. So you're saying soon enough there will be.
Soon enough. The museum CEO, Chevy Humphrey, thinks probably in about a year or a little more.
Okay.
They hired Robert M. Stern's firm to do it. And, and this was originally the front door of the museum back during the World's Fair days. And then when it closed, and then the building when the building was the Palace of Fine Arts then,
yes,
then it closes and becomes the Museum of Science and Industry, they oriented the entrance to the north, which is where it is now, the main entrance, and closed up the back entrance.
So now what's old is about to be new again.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And Lee, besides that physical change to the building, you're also hearing about another major possible change.
So this is huge. The CEO, Chevy Humphrey, told me that they want to make the museum free again. So if you're a gray beard like me, you remember as a kid, you know, it was free. Your parents could drop you off there, or you could get there on your own and have the wonders of the world in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's been missions since the 90s, but she wants to work to make it free again.
Oh, incredible. Yeah. My fingers are crossed for that day.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be awesome. All right. Well, all good reasons for us to make a trip over to the MSI. Let's jump into the full recap. Thank you so much for stopping by, Lee.
Thank you.
Also at the table to help make sense of the week's news was Talia Salglin, Chicago Tribune transportation and labor reporter, and Justin Lawrence, Crane Chicago business government and politics reporter. Now, we started our conversation by talking about the Obama Presidential Center's grand opening festivities and the many celebrities that have begun arriving. So here's Lee again with that update.
Well, you know, this is a big, you know, big thing. And of course, the biggest news of it is who's going to be performing there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's Bono, it's Christina Aguilera, we were joking in the room that, you know, maybe she was popular when he was in office. We didn't quite get why she was there, but she's there.
Okay.
Giving a 6-minute, I think, performance and talk. But also Stevie Wonder and others. So,
Jennifer Hudson, I think, is on that list too. John Legend.
Common,
of course. So this is pretty exciting. And it's hard to believe that a lot of it started with this conversation that took over about the building itself. Remember how divisive that talk was? I mean, there aren't too many architecture critics left at newspapers around the U.S., but because I've got you, I've got to get your official take on this, Lee.
You know, this is like the scales coming off the Paul's eyes in the Bible or something, that I was not a fan. Even in the book, I talked about not being a fan of the tower, not being a fan of such a big thing being built in the park. I'm still not a fan of that.
Did it grow on you?
But it did. You know, once you see the building up close and see people going through it, you begin to see that, you know, perhaps it's one of the, you know, sort of being like this crazy thing that's not about Chicago architecture, that it really is. It's about the people using the building, going through it, walking through it, and kind of getting excited about it. So there's this big tower, Granite Tower, and a set of four other buildings along with it, including a public library.
Yeah, it's a whole campus. It's a whole campus.
That and the landscape by Michael Van Valkenburg, the New York landscape artist, our architect, together they work out very nicely.
Yeah. You have also written about not just the building, but the art that's inside the Obama Center. What stands out for you? I'm curious.
You know, I'm a fan of the sculpture of the two of them outside.
They're walking and waving.
Walking and waving, taken from the walk that they did on Inauguration Day, the first Inauguration Day. You know, it's probably low art compared to some of the other art in there, but I like it. And people are taking their pictures by it. Then you go inside the building, and then there's a big, giant work of them, the portrait of them as well. But throughout it, I mean, there's the Astor Gates, there's Martin Perrier, there's all kinds of things in there. For a non-art museum, it's probably one of the best places I've ever seen to watch art.
Yeah, they're billing it more of like a cultural institution, they say, the Obamas themselves. Now, Monday on In the Loop, I actually sat down with three of the artists whose work is featured inside. I want to play a little bit from muralist Sam Kirk describing her piece. She collaborated on it with artist Dorian Sylvain. It's called Pass It Forward. It's a massive mural inside that home court gym.
Dorian and I really wanted to focus on creating this piece as one cohesive concept. And we wanted to focus on movement and showing how teamwork and how people come together. Once we decided that we were going to focus on basketball, it was really more so like, how are we going to bring in some of the community elements that is really important to our work into the piece as well.
Now, I also talked with Tiana Bowie about her piece. It's inside what's called the Action Lounge in the Obama Center. All of them mentioned, I thought this was interesting, how the process, first of all, took several months and how they were kind of kept in the dark in the beginning. You know, no one told them that this was for the Obama Presidential Center, which is kind of wild. But Justin and Talia, I got to bring you in here. Have you had a chance to visit yet?
Not yet.
Yeah, I have not. I've missed the invites
you
to some of
the
previews.
Media day.
I'm jealous listening to Lee talk about it. So I have not. I'm looking forward to going in.
Yeah. Do you have plans to visit, Talia?
I need to get tickets, but I'm excited to go. I've been watching it through other people's Instagram stories. So.
The reels are plenty. The Instagram reels, right? For sure. Now, it's estimated the Obama Center could get up to 1 million visitors a year. What do you think that's going to mean for the South Side, Lee?
Well, you know, first of all, the South Side is huge. So think of it, of a city that's, think of it that it's the size of Detroit. So if you're living at our 112th in Calumet, you know, it's not going to do a lot. But if you're in those immediate neighborhoods, South Shore, Woodlawn, Hyde Park, I mean, it's going to mean a lot. There's a chance there for that million, if they do come, to participate in business. You know, 63rd Street, which feeds right into it, had been the poster child throughout the 70s and 80s and into the 2000s for urban blight. Mm-hmm. And it's slowly coming back. This will help. So these kind of things that could possibly happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Haven't we already seen millions of dollars getting sort of more bus service to Jackson Park and improving neighborhood roads, Talia?
Yeah, I think Lee, you reported it was like $123 million in capital projects. And then there's things too, like the CTA is spending a couple million bucks a year to extend the 10 bus, make it easier for people to get there. And so lots of little changes like that in the neighborhood.
And Metro is fixing up their stations that are right there too. I think they're spending something like I'm not crazy. $74 million on those stations, the Metro spokesperson told me. So there's that. And there's another phase of road construction that's going to be happening as part of this. That $123 million is parks improvements, mm-hmm. you know, reconfiguring, taking away Cornell Drive, my old racetrack, to replace it with parkland for the library, for the presidential center. There's another phase coming as well.
I see. So are you already noticing some of these infrastructure improvements in area?
Oh, yeah. You can see it. I mean, the whole intersection east of 63rd Street and Stony Island is reconfigured.
Yeah.
Stoning itself in front of the presidential center.
Oh, it looks pretty perfect.
It's a boulevard, you know, yes. a tree line median. So there's a lot.
I've noticed as well. Now, you know, as exciting as all of this is for Chicagoans, there are still concerns about gentrification, particularly from nearby residents, as you mentioned, Woodlawn, South Shore. Many of them are worried about the impact of short-term rentals, for instance, on the housing stock. I talked earlier this week with a Woodlawn resident named Christy Ramsey. She rents out a bedroom in her condo via Airbnb. Here's her take on that whole thing.
We should have things that we can enjoy, just like every other North Side area in Chicago. And so I realize some of that will come with some increases, mm-hmm. but I think the increases should be valid. I should be able to see, okay, my mortgage went up $300. Why did my mortgage go up $300? What am I getting from that? Not just because something nice, quote unquote, nice came to Woodlawn, right? But because we got a new grocery store or we got a new bowling alley or something that's tangible that I can see.
Lee, Justin, I mean, weigh in. What are some of the differing opinions that you've been hearing about how the Obama Center might impact the community?
Well, you know, just that will drive up renters. You know, I tell this story all the time. When I was in college 5,000 years ago, back in the 80s, I dated a woman who had whose father lived in Woodlawn, had a beautiful graystone there. Mm-hmm. And I remember he told me, this is 1984, I'll never forget. He says, you know, one day houses around here are going to be $1 million. And we were like, oh, you're crazy. You could buy a block of Woodlawn for $1 million and have change left over. Now you see, even before the OPC was completed, you see housing, new housing for $7.99, $8.99. So that's going to happen. The question, which is terrible in a way, which is good in a way, but it's terrible if it displaces people. What has to happen now is there's enough vacant land in Woodlawn, in Washington Park, in the surrounding communities, where the city must be proactive about building affordable housing. So yeah, if the gentrifiers want to come, there's a place for them. If the person who lives in the neighborhood and has been through all this wants to stay, then there's a place for them too.
Now, I want to catch up on some other local news, Justin. Chicago's on pace to collect more than $49 million during the first year of its tax on social media companies. We were the first city to do this. Sounds like a major victory for Mayor Johnson.
It is, with some caveats, right? It's doing great. So far, it was projected to bring in $31 million in the first year, and it's on pace, like you said, to get nearly 50. The big caveat is there's a lawsuit filed by a group representing the social media companies. So, you know, do we get to keep the money or not?
Mm.
And then it is, so the way they set this up, it's they're collecting the money now, but it was not used as part of the 2026 budget. It's kind of being put in escrow, so to speak, and will be available next year if they're able to, you know, prevail in the lawsuit. And
the amount that we could potentially collect is more than they originally estimated, right? Like 60% more.
Yeah, it's $19 million in 1 year.
Wow.
And it's, you know, it's supposed to fund and benefit mental health programs in the city. And I guess my question is what will they do with the extra revenue that they maybe didn't anticipate? But,
mm-hmm.
you know, as far as tax collection in Chicago goes for a cash-strapped city, it's always good to see revenue higher than projected. And this is something the state has now imposed as well. And mm-hmm. and the city just recently, you know, is kind of fine-tuned the tax to match more in line with what the state is doing. In part to prevail in this lawsuit. So everything is going well so far, but again, there's a lawsuit that might
big tech
make
challenging.
It all null and void at some point.
Right. Another source of revenue has also become a source of friction between the state and the city. What is the latest on the video gambling in Chicago restaurants and bars?
So the state has, the Illinois Gaming Board has started to award those licenses to restaurants. I think there were six, right, initially. They still need their kind of a companion license from the city, but this is something that's very controversial. You know, the city council group that approved the budget over the mayor's objection included this as part of their budget plan. Mm-hmm. I think even within that group, there's disagreement over whether or not the city should do this. The big kind of opposing side of this is we have a Bally's casino, and it's in temporary form right now, but it's coming to River West, and the city gets a lot more tax revenue or a lot more share of gambling revenue than they do from VGT or video gambling machines.
Yes. And so Mayor Johnson's asking to pump the brakes a little bit.
Yeah, he's saying, hey, you only approve VGT a couple months ago. Let's repeal it. He put forward an ordinance that would do as much. It got quickly, the meeting to consider that got canceled. And mm-hmm. so we'll see if it comes back. But Bally's is really saying, like, you are putting millions in jeopardy, and we will we'll have to renegotiate the agreement we have with the city because you've allowed this.
Before we take a pause, Justin, one more here. A third source of revenue, looking at legislative changes. The governor has signed some hemp regulations into law. Fill us in on that.
Yeah, I mean, similar to video gambling machines and sweepstakes that are similar to those, it's like a gray market. That's what intoxicating hemp has been for years now. You know, Illinois has a legal cannabis market, and then there's the secondary hemp Delta 8 products, beverages that have kind of operated in this legal gray area. And the federal government is poised, unless they make changes, to ban unregulated intoxicating hemp by November. So the state law is essentially trying to mimic that. There were some changes, though, that got some of the hemp advocates on board with this. So mm-hmm. it's not what J.B. Pritzker was originally proposing, but this has been an issue for years. The city has tried to do their own ban. The mayor vetoed it. It's another one where we have to kind of keep our eye on it because it's not fully settled.
Another candidate has entered the Chicago mayoral race. Justin, I want you to tell us about George Cardenas.
Yeah, so this is a former 12th Ward alderman, current member of the Cook County Board of Review, which has a big role in deciding your property tax bill. He, you know, represented portions of the Southwest Side, longtime alderman. He is, like others, getting into the race, kind of taking a more moderate track, saying, mm-hmm. I will, you know, fix the city's finances. I'm, unlike others, willing to make the hard decisions and cuts. He is saying he can cut a whole lot of money without cutting services, which is really difficult to do. And look, he's not the first politician to say that. We're going to hear that a lot during this election. And he is the second person to officially get in.
Yeah, tell us more, because he's, as you alluded to, joining this already crowded field for that February 2027 election. So get us caught up on, I guess, the declared candidates mm-hmm. and who people are speculating.
Yes. So we've got Comptroller Susana Mendoza, former city clerk. Congressman Mike Quigley has mm-hmm. said he's in. I think he's doing an official launch party later this month, but he's in. I think the big one we're all waiting to see, well, two big ones we're waiting to see. One is Mayor Brandon Johnson actually going to run for re-election? He has not made that commitment. I would be surprised if he doesn't, but mm-hmm. he has to officially join at some point.
We're still waiting.
And then Secretary of State Alexi Janulius. Mm-hmm. He is the one with the big wad of money. You know, he's going to over $15 million, I believe, he's raised so far, ostensibly for his re-election to Secretary of State. but I don't think he's kidding. Everybody knows that that could be used for a race for mayor.
Right, right.
Man, I'm going to forget everybody. There's so many.
Maria Pappas, yes, I think Maria we're Pappas expecting
is,
to.
Is expecting.
Isn't it Joe Holberg?
Yes, Joe Holberg, another businessman named Liam Stanton is okay. in the race.
Maybe
some
crowded.
Aldermen. It's going to be a very crowded race, but I would expect that crowd to potentially winnow as the months roll on. I think especially in that moderate lane, the business community is going to want to avoid having so many people in that lane that they give the mayor a easy path to a runoff in his, you know, progressive side. So I'm confident there will be pressure on some of the people to get out if they don't really gain traction. I'm not confident that they actually will get out. But it's going to be
interesting.
I'm getting all flustered and nervous just thinking about covering it the next few months.
It's just going to be a lot of names for you to remember.
Lots of names. You have pressure. To remember their titles and how much money. So
hopefully that list starts to, you know, sort of trickle down over time. Something Mayor Johnson and previous Chicago mayors have been grappling with is still making headlines. That's the city's parking meter deal, Talia. What's the latest?
The gift that doesn't stop giving. As we all know, in 2008, the city decided to sell off its parking meters for 75 years to a private entity in a deal that's since become much loathed and was widely acknowledged to have been a really horrible deal financially for the city. Right now, the meters are owned by a group led by Morgan Stanley and owned in part by the Abu Dhabi Investment Authority. They want to sell to a New York-based investment firm called Stone Peak.
Mm-hmm.
Alder people are wondering, you know, this has to get approved by city council. Alder people are wondering, you know, is there anything we can do to use our leverage here with whatever, however much leverage it is to make this deal a little bit less bad for the city, but it's real
less
messy.
Bad.
And Justin, I'm curious what your take is on it at this point.
It's been very confusing to report on because there's a lot of uncertainty here. And like you said, aldermen are saying, hey, we have to sign off on this, and I'm not going to give up my vote unless the city gets a better deal out of this. The argument against that is that they might not have any leeway to do so because of the way that the contract was written. It's a bad deal for the city for a reason, and that includes how it gets transferred. And then the other side of that is they are risking, if they do oppose it or just don't take a vote, that if Stone Peak walks away from this, then the group led by Morgan Stanley is outright threatening and letters sent to the city.
Yeah.
Hey, we're going to take you to court, and you've essentially killed a deal worth billions of dollars to us, and we're going to hold you responsible. Just because they threaten that lawsuit doesn't mean they'll do it, and just because if they file it doesn't mean they'll win. Mm-hmm. But that is something that aldermen need to consider. You know, I think the only thing worse than voting. Essentially voting to extend the parking meter deal or to, you know, kind of re-up it, I guess, is voting it down and then having to come back and tell taxpayers, hey, we cost this city another $1 billion
that
plus.
You know,
that that doesn't look good on a mailer. So,
Lee, are you paying attention to this parking meter deal fiasco?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, worst deal in the city. Now, you know, I did some time in the mayor's office under Daley before the deal, though.
Okay.
I was there for 3 years as deputy chief of staff for urban planning.
I almost thought we could blame you for this.
No, you can't blame
you
me.
You clarified.
But there was always a sense in City Hall that when the city owned parking meters, there was always a sense that raising them was politically untenable. There's things you could have done. You could raise the parking meters. You can bond out the difference and do all kinds of things for infrastructure, transit, all kinds of things. But there's always a sense that, well, Chicagoans won't stand for that. And then so it gets passed on. And, you know, even the Skyway deal, which doesn't get talked about, I think is number two on the hit parade of bad deals. Because, you know, how much is it? I got trapped on that thing a few weeks ago. Is it $8 now?
Oh, yeah.
Like
it's about that.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. And, you know, it isn't so much of paying the extra, which is bad enough, but that the extra goes to others if you had to charge extra, it could go here. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, to make bad things worse would be the city council. And I know it's a different council. Now they're showing the nerve to strike up a opposition to this deal. Too bad they could have been done, you know, back in the day.
Yes.
But the worst thing that could happen from this, and I fear that would be the thing that would happen, is that it ends up costing us more, even more.
You know, Johnson didn't make this deal, but how do you think it could impact him going into the election we just talked about, right?
Yeah. I mean, politics is not nuance like policy is, right? So if this deal gets approved, there will absolutely be people saying, hey, Chicago, they had a chance to get out of it, and instead they doubled down with a new company. Remember, the mayor and the city put in a bid for it and then walked away, essentially saying that the risk was too high. But, you know, he is saying and has said from the beginning here that, hey, this is on the city council, by the way, that the law is written. It's on them to negotiate if they want to. You know, he's called it a ironclad agreement, suggesting there's not much that can be done. So he is kind of keeping his distance, but I don't know that.
Yeah.
If whatever outcome happens here, people are upset by, he will, even if he doesn't deserve it, will get some of the blame.
He will take some of the blame. You know, I think so.
I don't think so. I think if he does nothing, people will just shake their fist and they go into other things. There's other things on his plate that he could be criticized for. I think if he puts his hat into this and it gets screwed up, then he gets the blame for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Well, let's turn to a different transit story, Talia. It made headlines this week involving CTA leadership and RTA leadership. What should we know?
Yeah, so on June 1st, the state's landmark transit funding and reform bill took effect. People are probably most familiar with this because it's the bill that's going to raise a lot of money and prevent service cuts on the CTA this year. It also really changes how the transit agencies are governed. One of the things that it does is it really dilutes the power that the mayor of Chicago has historically had over the leadership of the CTA.
Mm-hmm.
The CTA has been led for more than a year by an acting president, Nora Learson, who has become really pretty popular with a lot of transit advocates, transit writers. Mayor has not made her permanent. He also hasn't replaced her with someone else, although he did try to last year. And prior to June 1st, the mayor had kind of made this last-minute push to get someone in there. He sent a letter to the CTA board saying, work with me, let's work expeditiously to make someone permanent. You know, the board did not make someone permanent before June 1st. Mm-hmm. And after the law took effect, Regional Transportation Authority Chair Kirk Dillard sent a letter basically saying, if you thought there was any wiggle room between now and September 1st, when a lot of these changes actually take effect in terms of the changes to governance, you know, there's not any changes to CTA leadership now. They have to go through this process where more people have to be involved.
Sticking with you here, Talia, bicycle activists, they've been mourning for the last couple of weeks the death of cyclist and city transportation planner Riley O'Neill. You've got more details, I understand, on the man who opened the car door that led to O'Neill's death on June 5th.
Yeah, so my colleague Madeline Buckley and I reviewed some court records, and we found the man who allegedly opened the door into Riley O'Neill's path. He had a history of traffic infractions. He was cited on the scene by Chicago police for several things, including operating an uninsured vehicle and driving on a suspended license. Turns out his license had been suspended last year for 3 years because he had refused a breathalyzer during a DUI stop. You know, that case is pending. And one thing that was really interesting was the Cook County Public Defender's Office, who has defended the man in other cases. You know, they did say that they're confident he will prevail in this pending case. They also joined calls for infrastructure improvements. You know, they said that infrastructure investments to improve traffic safety for all road users are a much more effective way to prevent further loss of life than seeking increased criminalization or maximum punishment, which you thought was interesting.
And sadly, the dooring, as it's known, it's pretty common, right? This type of traffic incident, it's something that I think urban cyclists are most afraid of while they're out on the streets. Did you talk with residents who sort of ride that same section of Bridgeport? What'd they say?
Yeah, you know, people said they would like to see protected bike lanes on that stretch. A lot of people think that is the best way.
It's a stretch of Halsted,
right? It's a stretch of Halsted where essentially the bicyclists are between often lines of parked cars and traffic. And so that's a big dooring concern. So people said they would like to see that. you know, one thing people also can do, it's called the Dutch reach. And so if you, when you're opening your car door, if you're the driver, you reach with your opposite hands, it makes you look to see if anyone is there.
That's right.
That's something that the cycling community has said for a long time, right? That yes, a human made the decision or allegedly to open the door and cause this accident, but it's really the infrastructure that is mm-hmm. putting everybody in this position. And if you look at that stretch, it's really hard to see how yeah. it is safe, even if no one can open a door.
If there were already barriers in place, then opening a door would not get you in the way mm-hmm. of a cyclist.
Right.
You know, and it's absolutely right. I mean, from an urban planning perspective, I mean, dividing up the road in an equitable way, you have to have protected bike lanes. I was in Amsterdam some years ago, and it's very clear from the way the whole road is designed where the bicyclists are, and mm-hmm. if you're a pedestrian or you're in the car.
You're right.
And I think that is what has to happen here,
yeah.
all over, throughout the city, in a consistent way that the driver can see and understand that's what this thing is.
Right. Yeah. On Tuesday, Governor Pritzker signed Illinois' $56 billion budget for 2027. Now, it includes hundreds of millions in new taxes on business, but incentives to keep the bears in Illinois were not in it, Justin.
No, they were not.
Give me some of the main takeaways then from this budget.
You know, there's new taxes here. Like we talked about before, this social media tax, mm-hmm. the state's projecting $200 million from that. And there's some other taxes that are, I guess, call it deferred implementation, that they aren't going into effect right away on crypto, on digital advertising, on these prediction markets that are all the rage, you know, essentially sports gambling, but characterized in another
Cal
way.
Calshi, and what's the other one? It starts with a P.
Yes.
I just get the ads all the time.
I am not on
YouTube.
It. And the state has also taken some measures to, I guess, prevent insider trading on those. But another thing that was in the budget that the mayor had to veto, remember this is a $56 billion budget, included $500 billion for the West Side NAACP. So he had to veto that.
That was a typo.
Yes, right.
Is that the kind of thing that happens when you do stuff in the middle of the
day? That's what I was going to say. When you vote on budgets at 5 a.m., you make some mistakes.
$500 billion for the NAACP.
I'm sure that they were.
The things that could be done with very, very good lobbyists. With that money. You know? That wasn't the only headline that our governor made, though, on Tuesday. During an interview with Punch Bowl News, he made what some see as his strongest case yet for a presidential run. So he compared Trump's actions to what he faced after defeating Republican Governor Bruce Rauner.
Many of the problems that we're currently facing, we faced in Illinois, frankly, when I took office in 2019. You know, the government had been hollowed out. We had had, massive issues with people's rights being taken away. We had hundreds of thousands of people who had not been allowed to get on Medicaid in the state because the governor decided it was cheaper for him if he just didn't process people's applications. Now, think about that. You're in need of health care, and the governor is basically saying, sorry, you can't have it. We're just going to kind of put your application in a drawer and forget about it.
So he went on to argue that governors are the best people to run the federal government. So I'm curious what you all think. I mean, are you seeing increased signs of a presidential run for Pritzker?
I don't know if I'd say increased, just because to me it's the signs have been there for a long time, and he might ultimately.
So he's just consistent.
Yeah, right. Like I maybe he will start to ramp up, but he seems interested in it. He's making moves that show he is. He's not only, you know, he's going everywhere to speak at these Democratic functions. He's pouring money into swing states via a separate vehicle he has. And this is what governors that run for president do, mm-hmm. say, hey, I am experienced executive, and here is my experience in Illinois. I wonder how far into the weeds, if he does run, he'll get into the Madigan-Rauner dynamic before he took office. Probably doesn't have national appeal. But, yeah, I mean, that's going to be his argument if he does run, is, hey, I inherited a lot of problems, and we've passed balanced budgets and steadied the ship. And I don't know. We'll see how much traction he picks up. He certainly has a lot of money to get his message out there.
And you said it. I mean, we've been kind of seeing it for a while. It'd be interesting if he does do this to see how the shift, that day where he does sort of flip the switch and say, psych, I'm running.
Remember, I mean, he is running for re-election currently. So
for people, his governor job,
you know, there's always tension there if people see you as you're running for one job and you really want another. So he's always tried to tiptoe around that, and it's just going to be harder as we approach his own re-election. And really, if he's going to run for president, I would think he makes some sort of announcement to that effect first quarter, early second quarter of next year.
The clock's ticking.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. I mean, clearly he's sniffing it up. You can tell. There's even, and I speak this as a full-figured man myself, who's losing weight. There's even a little weight loss going on there. He's more of a national presence in media. I mean, all of these things are like the signs of someone. And of course, he's sitting on those billions, and it's hard to, you know, it's hard to sit idly by.
Yeah.
And you know, he's got a candidate. His lieutenant governor is likely going to be the next senator from one of the next senators from Illinois.
That's right.
So all these things to me show that if he doesn't, he's giving it a good. He's kicking the he's kicking the tires and starting
the
car.
For sure.
If he doesn't buy or not, we'll know. But
absolutely, yeah, you're not wrong. So residents throughout northern Illinois were still recovering from last week's storms, which brought a total of 19 tornadoes when the torrential rains came yesterday. Now, Chicago was spared from the worst of it yesterday. Parts of Illinois, mainly from Peoria to Springfield and Champaign, were hit with tornadoes. Much of the city saw like 1 to 2 inches of rain with high winds yesterday afternoon. Did you all get caught in that? I left the office right in the middle of it. So my car and I were trying to make sure we, you know, stayed straight in the lane. How about y'all?
No, I was downtown. I thought it was going to pour, but it seemed pretty. We got spared.
Oh, good,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah, I was safely tucked inside City Hall covering a very long city council meeting. So
safely tucked in.
I didn't
in.
See outside.
Only a little. I mean, this is terrible of me, but I hadn't washed my car in a while, so I drove to this lot around my house where the rain could fall on it and wash it clean. So that was my contribution to the whole thing.
Well, thankfully, we are looking forward to some sunny skies today and throughout most of the weekend. Now, Chicagoans gathered recently to mark tomorrow's Juneteenth holiday with a Juneteenth flag-raising ceremony at Daley Plaza. Mayor Johnson was there. He talked about the progress that's been made in the country as well as the work that's still left to do.
As our country prepares to celebrate 250 years of history, we must be honest in this moment. White supremacy still wants to grip our necks with its ugly hands. But as long as we remain together, we can continue to break free and experience liberation as our ancestors dreamed of.
Juneteenth became a federal holiday in 2021 during the Biden administration. President Trump can't cancel a federal holiday without an act of Congress, but he did remove it, along with Martin Luther King Jr. Day, from the free national park days. He instead made his birthday, which is also Flag Day, a free national parks day. Speaking of Trump, his administration is challenging the reparations program for Black residents in Evanston. In 2021, Evanston became the first and so far the only U.S. city to launch a program of its kind. Black residents and their direct descendants who lived in the city between 1919 and 1969 and experienced housing discrimination, they were eligible for up to $25,000. And so far, they've handed out more than $5 million in cash and housing grants to 212 applicants. Tuesday, the Department of Justice joined a lawsuit. It's arguing that that program's race-biased criteria is unconstitutional and it amounts to racial discrimination. And in other news, there's an update on the burning cross that was found in Grant Park last week. Now, police have charged 21-year-old Merlin Liu from Naperville with multiple felonies, including hate crime, arson, and reckless conduct charges. Now, after police released that surveillance image to the public, the suspect came forward. He did an exclusive interview with NBC5 where Liu says this wasn't an act of racism. It was just a protest against the Trump administration. He's due back in court today. In other news, Justin, developments in two legal cases that made recent headlines. First, I want to talk about the latest on ComEd CEO Anne Pramaggiore and former lobbyist Michael McLean.
Yeah, so they were convicted, you know, as part of this wide-ranging conspiracy to influence former Speaker Mike Madigan. And that was overturned in the appeals court. And what came about this week is the appeals court made clear in their decision that they threw it out, but that does not mean that they are saying that they were innocent,
mm-hmm.
and that the U.S. district attorney can is free to take that case up again if they want to. And he has said, you know, we're kind of evaluating it. Should be noted that that case was first tried and won under a different U.S. attorney, right? So that's a lot of resources that they would have to put in for it. But that was a big win, and it got thrown out, and they've been given kind of a lifeline here to try it again. And it'll be interesting to see, especially with how many other related cases were part of that kind of larger conspiracy.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going to happen, but it's certainly interesting that they're saying, hey, just because we threw out that case doesn't mean that they're innocent.
They're free. Yeah, you're free to retry them.
Yeah.
So we've also got developments in that case of the ICE protesters known as the Broadview Six. Speaking of stories that keep on giving, Talia, give us the latest with them.
Yeah, so the attorneys for the former Broadview Six defendants, they're asking for a special counsel to investigate this alleged prosecutorial misconduct that came to light last month. And the case, you know, totally unraveled with federal judge April Perry after she reviewed these, you know, unredacted grand jury transcripts saying she was seeing behavior that was shocking. So they're calling for, you know, an independent investigation of this.
Now, Lee, you had another story because birds, they're the highlight of a new exhibition at the Chicago Architecture Center. What should we know about this?
It's a great exhibition. It talks about, and it's put together by Jeannie Gang, the architect, and also Openlands. It's kind of two companion exhibits. Mm-hmm. And the Openlands exhibit talks about the sort of the natural wildlife and open spaces that exist around us and how we're not just a city. You
right.
know? And then you go through that and then you get to the Flyway City, the gang exhibition, which talks about how not to design buildings so that birds went into them. And this is a huge thing. I mean, you might recall that McCormick Place years back, there was, you know, I don't know,
thousands
of birds one night. So there are things you can do to the glass, to the building for the first 100 feet or so up. The idea is to raise awareness, to have little things that kids can do to show how you can make your own windows at home bird safe. But also, I think the underlying thing is to ultimately push for an ordinance that requires buildings built and remodeled buildings to have these kind of measures.
Yeah, because when you put in those safety measures, they work.
They do work. I mean, the McCormick Place, the bird strikes went down from that number to like 98% gone. There's a bird that used to, when I bought my house in Pullman, they used to hit my back window. And I found out from one of the neighbors, if you turn out the light in the hallway, it stops it. And I haven't had a bird strike in 5 years. So, you know, there are things you can do.
Oh, for sure. Now, a popular spot for birds may soon be getting a new name. I'm talking about the fact that 15th Ward Alderman Ray Lopez is introducing this legislation to rename Chicago's Northerly Island in honor of our hometown Pope Leo XIV. So if passed, he wants it to be named Pope Leo XIV Northerly Island.
It's a mouthful. I think the idea or his stated idea behind this is the Pope. We can't just rename a solitary street after him. We have to go big. You know, Chicago's front yard should be named after him. I have not spoken with the Pope or his representative to know his feelings on this.
You haven't?
No. I'll try. Every other Illinois resident has apparently visited him. But, you know, there's an issue here, and that is, you know, a rule against – this is a Park District and City rule, I believe, against naming renaming streets after people who are still living. I think they might be willing to make an exception here, but I don't know that it will be – the specific way, you know, it's interesting, and I expect something to get renamed.
On the heels of what you just said, let me throw something else in the mix, because another alder, Brendan Riley of the 42nd Ward, is also proposing honoring a notable Chicagoan. He's proposing renaming the strip of Wabash Avenue that's in front of the Trump Tower Barack Hussein Obama Way. Lee, why are you laughing?
They're both nutty ideas to me, if you ask me. The thing for the Pope, the thing to do is to remember his church that his home church out in the Riverdale community.
Mm-hmm.
Get some cash to that and help that vacant building and complex turn around. That's how you honor the Pope.
Okay.
And I think in terms of, you know, the idea of sending a gotcha to Trump by putting the Obama name on the street next to him. I think it's the other way around. Obama might not want his name to be next to,
would not want
to Donald Trump. And I think, you know, there are things you can do. Brandon Riley wants to run for mayor, I do believe, and I think in part of the group of people who have at least sniffed around the idea.
Oh, interesting.
And I, you know, there are just other things to do. Leave Wabash alone.
Yeah.
Wabash is doing fine by itself.
No, Obama wants nothing to do with this. I'm not his official spokesperson, but I'm going to be on record today.
That's right.
Listen, they go high when people go low.
That's
remember?
Right. Now, that's right. Lower whacker, you know, even. You know,
but, exactly.
But no, not Wabash.
Yeah, the mayor was asked about this yesterday and was also asked, hey, are you going to, we don't know how Barack Obama feels about this. Will you ask him? And he kind of laughed and said, you know, I have a lot of things I want to talk to the former president about, and I don't know that I'm also going to say, hey, how do you feel about
how
this?
How do you feel about, right.
So, I take that back. Brendan Riley wants to be county board president. I'm sorry.
He did run for county board. I mean, that's he's right. always flirted with a run for mayor. I'd be surprised this time. But yeah, I mean, this is in his ward, right? So
that's right.
And there was kind of a ground movement, an online petition about this. So he is kind of tapping into that. And, you know, there's not so much downside risk for him to just introduce an ordinance that whether right. or not it goes forward.
So summer is officially here this Sunday, Talia. That also signals the arrival of the travel season. Mm-hmm. How are things looking for the city's airports this summer?
Despite it all, despite pricey airfare, despite the FAA coming in and cutting flights at O'Hare, it is looking busy, which means that if you're one of those people who likes to stress out your loved ones by getting to your gate right before takeoff, you should leave more time if you're traveling during the summer.
I feel attacked. Yes, it's me. It's me rushing to the gate, you know, right at the top. I mean, does no one else do that?
If you're not missing a flight every now and then, you're getting there too early.
I'm horrified.
Come on. I got to try to play it cool. But then, you know, of course, you miss the flight and you're sitting there as others get on the flight that you know, were supposed to be on. Any travel plans this summer, folks?
I don't believe in leaving the city in the
what?
Summer.
Oh, you should leave at other times. Okay.
Yeah.
I thought you meant like ever.
No, you can leave in February.
I was going to say, Talia, see the world. There's much more out there.
Not by plane. You know, maybe by train. I like trains. So maybe by, and there's a road trip I've been wanting to take to photograph some Louis Sullivan buildings around the Midwest, old banks that he did. So there might be that.
Very cool. I think we're taking a road trip at some point to the East Coast, which will be cool. You'd probably end up in New York, D.C., along the New York DC mm-hmm. corridor.
We're going to Yellowstone this year in September, so not, you know, yeah. a little after summer. But
have you been?
I have not. I'm very much looking forward to it. We booked this, you know, a while ago, and it's like now it's approaching. I need to read a Yellowstone book or something to get kind of re-energized around it. But yeah, we're pretty excited about
Yellowstone 101. It's out there, I'm sure.
There's plenty of books.
Real quick before I let you folks go, what stories are you watching next week? Justin, since you're in the hot seat.
Parking meters? You know, there's a hearing on...
Talia's like, you took mine.
Yeah, I mean, know. There's a hearing coming up with... there will be no vote, but a subject matter hearing, I guess, where Stone Peak will be in the room. Mm-hmm. We're told, and the city's attorneys and Jones Day, who the city hired to as an independent counsel, will be there. So that'll be my life.
That's plenty
next
to watch, yeah. for sure. Talia?
He stole mine. I feel like that's one to watch with popcorn, probably.
And Lee.
I can't stay out of Jackson Park, so I'll be thinking about writing something about the Museum of Science and Industry opening up its back door to the lagoons to the back.
That's right.
And also, the CEO, Chevy Humphrey, said one day making the museum free again.
Oh, yes. It's free, I think, just for the day, on Friday,
that's
tomorrow.
Right. It'll be free all the time, like it used to be when I was a kid.
Awesome.
That was a good example that just because you rename something the Ken Griffin Science of Music, it doesn't mean that people tack that on to when they speak about it.
They don't. Hello, Willis Tower. Yeah. All right. That's it for the weekly news recap. My thanks to Justin Lawrence of Crane Chicago Business, the Chicago Tribune's Talia Soglin, and Lee Bay of the Sun-Times.
This episode of the In the Loop podcast was produced by me, Andrea Guthman, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/InTheLoop. Thanks for listening.